Over 2,000 years ago, in what is now called Israel and Palestine, there lived a Jewish man called Jesus. Having said that, I'm not sure how much I really need to say here, because I'm pretty sure most of you can tell me something about who Jesus was. So I want to actually invite you to do that now. Anybody got anything they'd care to call out about who Jesus was? I'm looking for one-word answers, not, you know. Troublemaker, what else? Rabbi, teacher, a Jew, a carpenter. I've got a little checklist. So far, you guys are doing great. What else? Resurrected, and what else up here? A threat to the establishment. That is on my list. A son, love, a healer, Messiah. Okay, anybody tell me about, was he all alone in the world? Did he have any people with him? He had disciples who were his followers, and also teachers who, having learned what he taught, shared it onward with other people. And there's one more thing that was an important part of his, I mean, there's lots that was an important part of his context, but one more thing I'm just looking for quickly. Who were the people, Mary Magdalene? Who were the people who were in power at the time Jesus lived? The Romans. And were they from Israel-Palestine? No, they were from far away. They actually came from the other side of a great ocean. But they came there and they were taxing the people, which means they were taking their money and their goods. And they were also telling people how they could behave and how they were not allowed to behave. But. So that's the setting for what we're talking about today.
Jesus.
Kathy, take it away.
I've got it. Jesus' most important teaching was that people all matter equally. Every single person is part of the sacred web of interconnection and belonging. He taught this over and over again, not just with words, but how he lived, welcoming and engaging with all people, even those, especially those, who were disrespected. Poor people, the sick, women, and tax collectors who gathered money for the Roman Empire. Because large crowds gathered around to hear Jesus' message of hope, love, and welcome, the authorities, especially the Romans, saw him as a dangerous troublemaker. As the holiday of Passover was being celebrated in the temple in Jerusalem, Jesus went there, along with many others, to celebrate the holiday that honors the hope of freedom and opportunity for oppressed and persecuted people everywhere. Especially given the themes of Passover, his message that all people were loved and worthwhile seemed all the more to challenge those in power. Jesus was arrested by Roman soldiers. The next day, he was sentenced by the Romans to die a horrible death, being nailed to a wooden cross, and that's what happened right away. His supporters were devastated, sad beyond words, frightened for their own safety, and hopeless. Imagine what this must have been like for his followers. In just a few days, to have gone from gathering to celebrate the big holiday to the sudden, horrible loss of their beloved leader, the source of their inspiration and hope. They knew they could only count on each other now. They realized people wouldn't forget Jesus or his teachings about loving each other and that every person matters. If his followers wrote down that Jesus did and said and taught and that everyone could. It was still Passover, after all, and the whole point of Passover is how powerful and important it is to tell the story of how the people were saved from their oppression and suffering. Lots of people wrote down different versions of how Jesus lived and taught. According to the very oldest version of the story, On the third day after Jesus' death, three women, they had been the only ones to stay with him, went to the place where Jesus was buried, bringing spices to anoint his body. On the way, they talked about how difficult it would be to roll away the heavy disc of stone in front of the tomb. But when they got there, they found the stone rolled away and Jesus' body was gone. The women ran from that place, frightened, and stories began to spread. If his body wasn't in the tomb, what did that mean? What could have happened? Especially to Jesus, known for miraculous healing, what could have happened? The news spread through the city. Jesus, the healer, the miracle worker, wasn't in his tomb. Eventually, someone said, maybe someone had seen him. Maybe some of the apostles had seen him. Someone said his disciple Mary had seen him, or maybe it was Mary, his mother. He'd done miracles before, things no one believed would be possible. Why couldn't he, or indeed God, who seemed to so favor Jesus, have done this? Some people were saying he was in the city. Others said he was seen on the road out of town. After almost 1,000 years, some people said there'd been a new Passover miracle. Off his followers must have rushed to find him, or at least to seek him. The possibility of new life for Jesus gave comfort to his followers, those who believed in his message of hope and care for all people. They had a rebirth of strength and resolve. They wrote down their memories. They renewed their pledges to live and believe as Jesus had taught them. And they handed on the gifts of his teachings about love and respect all these years later to all of us. Nowadays, there are lots of ways of remembering Jesus, how he lived, what he taught, how he suffered at the end. Many of us know that one of the traditions includes hunting for a basket filled with eggs, symbol of health and new life and hope, sometimes also filled with sweets, which also go along with new life and hope. Those things are always sweet to us.
But first, I have to tell you this quick story about the very first time I heard about Jesus. Although it may not have been the actual first time I heard about Jesus, I can definitely say this is for sure my first memory of learning about Jesus, and it was when I was a very, very little girl. I was in a doctor's office. I think it was a dentist's office, but either way, it was a doctor's office for kids, and so there were a lot of kids' books on the table in the waiting room, and I took one. And I read a story. I had recently learned to read, and I was really enjoying the world that opened up for me. So I just picked any book, because I was always interested to read. And I read a story about this guy named Jesus. And the story went on about how special he was, and how much good he did over the course of his life, and how he was always honest. Think about it. He was always honest about everything he said and did. And at the end of the book, it said that maybe Jesus would come back someday. When he did, he could be anybody, even you. I was amazed. What a thought. A, maybe he would come back while I was alive, which seemed like that would be amazing. But then I thought, oh my gosh, he could be me. What if I could be Jesus? What if I could be that special person and do that much good? It was dizzying. It was thrilling. I was so excited. For one moment, because I kept reading, and what I read next said that whoever he came back as, the way we would know that this person was Jesus again would be that amazing honesty, because Jesus never lied. Now, I later learned that this is not usually held up as the way to recognize Jesus. But that is what it said in that very first book that taught me about him at the time. And immediately, my heart sank. Because, yeah, as you may have guessed, I had already lied. In fact, at that young age, I had already lied 2 times. Twice. I could remember distinctly what both of them were. Well, now I can't. You know what? I would tell you what they were, but my parents are right here in the second pew, and they still don't know about them. But I could remember both lies I had told, and it was both times it was to try to avoid getting in trouble for something that I had done. By accident, but still something that I had done, and I didn't want to get in trouble for it, so I lied about it. And now I had ruined everything. I had already known that lying was wrong, but now I realized there was even more bad about lying than I had already known. Not only was lying wrong, and not only did lying make me feel terrible and give me this sick feeling in my stomach. How many people know that really sick feeling in your stomach when you tell a lie? A lot of us. Interestingly, not all of us. Which suggests one of 2 things. But, not only was there all that I not already knew about, but now I realized that I had ruined any chance I had had to be Jesus. I was only a few years old, and it was already too late for me. I was crushed. I really was crushed. I still remember all this in detail all these years later about what I thought and what I felt. I am not making up or exaggerating any of this to tell you this morning. Now, these days, I am more reconciled to that reality. And I don't expect Jesus to return in my lifetime, or even at all. But I do expect to pay attention to what he taught, especially to how important it is to respect and care for other people, just like I learned in that book long ago. All other people, and not just me or the people I know. And that is why so many religions, including ours, hold him up as a great religious presence. Last week, we heard about what the great Unitarian minister and American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson said about Jesus back in the 1800s. Maybe you remember it if you were here last week, that what set Jesus apart was not his divine birth, but his extraordinary capacity to recognize and honor the divine in everyone, including himself, but in everyone, which in turn magnified the sacred within him. A capacity, Emerson said, that we could all have if we would only perceive it. If we put this in simpler terms, Emerson said, Jesus was like everyone. He just lived into his sacred ability to be good, to care for others, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be loving. So loving, it was loving beyond belief. If we put this in contemporary Unitarian Universalist times, Jesus set a unique standard for living into our first principle of Unitarian Universalism, respect for the inherent worth, say it with me, the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. Now, this morning, in celebrating some marvelous youngsters and welcoming them into this faith and this particular community of faith, we restated the commitments that we make to this faith all the time, to freedom and peace and justice and world community and respect and responsibility and love. And we tend to use a lot of formal language to talk about this because they are high beliefs and they are deep promises. But one of my favorite examples of a baby or child dedication is actually the exact opposite of all that high language we used. And it was first shared with me by Ken Sawyer, now the Minister Emeritus of First Parish in Whalen, Mass. And it comes from a Kurt Vonnegut novel called God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And this is the premise. Rosewater, who is this wealthy and alcoholic philanthropist, has been asked to baptize a set of twins from the wrong side of the tracks because no minister will. Clearly, they had no Unitarian Universalists in that town. But he's asked to do it, and he agrees. And he gets asked by somebody, what will you say? And what will you do when you baptize these children who need love, who especially need love? And he says, go over to her shack, I guess, and sprinkle some water on the babies, and I'll say, hello, babies. Welcome to Earth. It's round and wet and crowded. At the outside, babies, you've got about 100 years here. And there's only one rule that I know of, babies. God damn it, you've got to be kind. Hello, babies. All of us. Welcome again this spring to the earth all around us. It is round and wet and crowded. And at the outside, we've got about 100 years here. And the rule that matters most, out of which everything flows, or not, if we spurn it, God damn it, we have got to be kind. We've got to be kind, which is so much more than being nice. Kindness is active. Caring for other creatures and the earth, it necessarily offers care. It necessarily concerns itself with the well-being of others. And when it's big, it becomes seeking and making justice. How many books have been written about what Jesus taught and about what he said and about what he meant? And it all boils down to this. We've got to be kind. We've got to live into our sacred gift that is our ability to be kind. And this brings me to your basket. Right, those traditions at Easter, hunting for Easter eggs. Somebody very kindly left me jelly beans in my pulpit this morning. And also a little statue of a black dog. The tradition is we hunt for Easter eggs and jelly beans and sweet treats, and we do what with them? We put them in our basket, or we go out and find a basket and it's full of Easter eggs and jelly beans, right? This basket that we've made together in this service is meant to hold a different kind of sweetness. So all this week, we're going to ask you to practice some Easter mindfulness. We want to invite you to reflect on kindness in your life, and there's two kinds that we're interested in you thinking about. Kindness that you offer others, and kindness that you receive from others. From right now to next Sunday. And we want you to keep track of them. We want you, in fact, to write them down in just a word or a phrase. You don't have to spend a lot of time on it. You could tear off a little piece of paper, a napkin at a meal, and just write a word or phrase on it. But we want you to put it in your basket. If you don't yet know how to write, or if you just don't like doing it, you could make a little picture of what it is. And you can put that in your basket. But we want you to keep track of the kind things you do and the kind things that are done for you. And we want you to put them in your Easter basket. You can fold it if you need to make it fit. But try not to overlook anything. Try to put all of it in your basket. All that sweetness. If you're with friends or family when you're doing it, do it together with them and think about it together. Maybe talk about it together. The difference giving and receiving kindness is making in your life this week. I think I know why that book, all those years ago, said that in order to be like Jesus, the most important thing was not to lie. I mean, I get it. I think the purpose of that book was in part to teach little kids not to lie. How important it is not to do that, how bad lying is. So let me say from up here in the pulpit, that is true and it is bad. And we need to not lie to each other or to ourselves. But telling the truth is not the most important thing. The most important thing is love. The most important thing is love, which often looks like kindness. Love beyond belief, which we are all capable of. Living more deeply into that and stretching our ability to do just that. To be kind, to be compassionate, to be not loving, but love. To be love to each other. And to all those we encounter, because that's the other difference. Jesus wasn't just love within the circles he already knew. He was love to everybody. It's a sacred gift for all of us. It is more available than we act like it is. Perhaps more than life honors. More important, perhaps, than our own lives honor. But it is never too late to change and grow. Never too late for new life. Never too late for new love. So happy Easter.